Hey friends, Mentality of Combat Sports, but we're in a different room. Something has changed. David Mullen, sports psychology consultant, David Mullen, sportpsychology.com. Robin Black, I'm Robin Black MMA on Twitter. And as you can see, we're in the big studio, which is different. You know, it's different. We're just here because this was what was available. And the non-controllable was that the other studio was busy, so we took this one. But Dave, that tees up directly into Madison Square Garden.
100%.
So does this feel different to you?
It feels very different, and we have to adapt.
Yeah.
It is different, and we look at different places, mm-hmm. and we're looking at each other from a different angle, and the room is different. And nobody's ever fought in Madison Square Garden before. No one in the UFC has ever done that, and every fighter on that card that night has to acknowledge that. They have mm-hmm. to prepare for that mentally.
Yeah.
They have to they're getting to do the walkouts during the week. They can go through it and rehearse and get the visuals of it, but they still won't get an idea of what it's going to feel like until the night itself.
So we're going to acknowledge that it's going to feel weird.
Yeah.
We're going to acknowledge that whatever you think, it may not be that way.
Yeah, it's going to be a different event. You have to plan for these events. You can't just go in there with the same attitude as if you're fighting in a show in a smaller venue. The event and the magnitude of it has to be prepared for, because it can spook you on the night if you haven't. Mm-hmm. If you've just been putting it off, as in, it's just another fight. Once we get in there, bro, it'll be fine. That attitude will get you in trouble on the night, because it'll spook you, because it is going to be a special event. And the build-up is different, and everything feels different. And so you have to plan for that. But you can plan for that. You can plan for that by looking back over old tape of old fights that were in the arena recently. You can visualize for it. That's what I would be doing with fighters in the build up. All that stuff can be planned for, so there's no spooking you on the night then.
So I'm currently, I don't know where to put my hands. I never sit in the spot. I don't know where my leg goes. I don't know how Pollock and Ramdean sit here.
Yeah.
Normally that is my camera over there, but currently this is the middle thing, and I'm never looking at this one. And hey, how you doing? All of these things are different. Also, the tone of where you normally do your things. You and I sit in a room and we casually talk, and now I feel like I'm doing TV.
Yeah.
But this is what I do,
yeah.
right? So you just have to adapt. And ultimately, those guys are going to be in the Madison Square Gardens. It's going to be weird. But in the end, they're fighting a mixed martial arts fight in a cage,
exactly.
which they've done a lot of times.
Exactly. That's all. That's what you want to get to, is what you're asking them to do. You can't just arrive at that point of just go do MMA in a cage. That's what you want to do. We're just talking in the studio about fights.
Right.
But they have to go through the point of acknowledging what's there and the differences of it, and planning for that and preparing for that, so that then they can get down to doing MMA in a cage, which is what they would want to do anywhere. Whether that's like the same night in London, Cage Warriors is on, and that is on in an arena with just invited guests, maybe 150 people in the room. It's in a studio, in a TV studio, and I've got a guy in that card, and that's a completely different event to be planning for, but we need to plan for that. We need to prepare for that. It feels like the Ultimate Fighter kind of a studio. Mm-hmm. That needs to be planned for. That can spook you as well, just as much as a giant. It's not so much the giant magnitude right. of the crowd. It's just that it's different, but it can be planned for.
The unfamiliarity.
Yeah, yeah.
I've definitely read before that different parts of your brain are engaged in novel and new experiences.
Yeah.
So if you're not prepared, if you don't know that, it can seem and feel weird. Your literal experience of the event, of the night, of everything will be different. It'll feel different because it'll actually be different.
It'll be different, but you can visualize, and that can have the same reactions for you, like as if the actual experience is happening when you visualize it, if you do it properly, which is what I've done with every fighter in preparation for a fight. We visualize not just the fight, but we visualize the backstage, getting your hands wrapped, and the runner coming back and saying, okay, you're up next, and the walkout, the waiting behind the curtain part, the actual hitting the crowd and the atmosphere, all that stuff. We'll plan for all of that. Being in first, being in second, all the different things that are there, because they're all, you know, those are crucial moments, and you want to be on point. You want to know how you're going to you want to be in charge of your mindset in those moments.
Now, there's science that talks about the visualization and visualizing things and how much of your brain experiences as if it's a real thing. There's a certain amount where your brain actually can't tell the difference between visualization and doing it.
Yeah. And I see that all the time with the heartbeat's way up and the breathing is way up after we come out of the visual. And
the sweating, maybe.
The sweating, and not just that, they're throwing shots in the visual. Like they're not even aware they're doing it, but they're just moving their shoulders and they're just landing shots. And I know what position they're in the fight.
Crazy.
Based on how they are. And I'm saying in the prep point, They're getting the Vaseline on the eyes, and they're doing the check on the mouthpiece, and you can see them kind of showing the mouthpiece, and it's real.
If they're visualizing properly, if they've got ready to do it, if they've got themselves in a mindset, if they're committed to doing it.
Yeah, but that's us talking through it. So we have warmed up for it, and then we've talked through it, and so it's not just someone closing their eyes and picturing it. It's a systematic process where I'm guiding them through all of those parts. Once the fight starts, they see the fight themselves.
Obviously, we got to talk about McGregor because you're a biased McGregor nut hugger, as
I
am.
Yeah.
But I'm also a very enormous fan of Eddie Alvarez. He's truly one of my favorite fighters ever.
Yeah.
You're still a biased Irish McGregor nut hugger.
Yeah, completely.
And that will be not only shown, but it will be pointed out by many. But who cares, right? We'll also talk about some of the other... Everybody has a different experience. Everybody has different mindset and different mental challenges and stuff. But I want to get off topic for a second because it relates to Miesha Tate.
Okay.
So Miesha Tate's worst performance, of recent history was her biggest performance.
Yeah.
The biggest stage, UFC 200, headlining. And what do you take away from that if you're working with Miesha Tate? I mean, she really... I think she's talked about it. I've seen it a little bit. But it wasn't just... She lost the fight, or she got rocked, or something happened. She wasn't performing.
She didn't perform.
She didn't perform.
Yeah, yeah.
So what do we do? What do we take?
Well, We go back in terms of, like any fight, I go back in terms of the preparation. We review the preparation. Was it different? How were you being affected by the event and being cast into the main event and defending your belt and all that kind of stuff? Was that too much weight on you? And did you feel that pressure? Did you acknowledge it in the build-up, or did it sneak up on you in the night, and did you feel it? What was the preparation like? Did you take her for granted? All these different things that are controllable. We'd review all of these, technically, physically, in terms of training or whatever, if there's certain things around the weight cut or whatever it was, because I think it was a tough weight cut for her. But all these things are controllable. We get down to that, review them all, find the truths in them. And then we don't have to reinvent the wheel. This is a thing that there can be a massive overreaction to a fighter after a devastating loss like that, where they just try to throw everything out and start afresh. And they don't need to do that because she was champion, so it can't be all wrong. It's like Conor after the Nate loss as well. You make some adjustments and some tweaks, but it's not like you need to completely change everything. Ronda's going to go through the same thing now heading into the fight with Nunes as well.
Going into this one.
Find out what parts are working. Maybe what were neglected, get back to them. What parts need to be changed? But it's just like confidence can't be like she. Her confidence would have been sky high after the Holly win, and then it based on that, it should be rock bottom now after the Nunes loss. Neither of those things are true. Mm-hmm. They're just not. So you have to find what the truth is, and the confidence needs to be can't be just based on one performance. Yeah. You're made up of so much more than that. But getting down to that and finding out what you can control and change, and that's where she should be. She should have gone through that, and hopefully she's ready to put in a performance on Saturday.
Yeah, we shall see. Weidman falls into some of the similar things. Never before lost. Nobody had it figured out, really. And then suddenly he's lost, and a surgery, and pressure. He had lost in the past, as everybody has lost, in wrestling. He lost, and he talked about it, how I think you saw it, Rambi and I were talking to him, and he was like, I was a choke artist. He acknowledged that he had that repetition of failure in big situations, addressed it, obviously, made changes, and was succeeding in the heaviest of situations, like fighting Anderson Silva.
Yeah.
And then now after a loss, hopefully he doesn't swing too far one way or the other.
Yeah, but I think he's talked a lot about that in terms of what he learned from that Rockhold fight, and the adjustments he's made, and we get to see it now. We get to see it being put into action, those little adjustments. And that thing that happened to him and maybe happened to Miesha, where you get the belt, you get the title, you take on that new added pressure, and it kind of causes you, instead of going out there and just expressing yourself, you're trying not to lose, which is a tough mindset to go in. That's not the one that got them there. Mm-hmm. They became champions because they were on a mission to get something, and then immediately they have it, and it can become negative and defensive and try not to lose, which, that's not going to work. It never works.
No. And we saw Lawler in his first or second title defense, going for Hendricks, and then, on and on and on, Rory and stuff, just kind of get better and better until he didn't have a great performance.
Yeah.
But I know we're going to talk about McGregor. We're going to talk about Alvarez.
Yeah.
You're going to observe good things and bad things about both guys. But and words is something we often look at. When we are examining what people say, what fighters say, yeah. there are many reasons they may say it, including this will sell tickets.
Yeah.
Perhaps this will make my opponent think something. This is a lie that his coach and teammates might think is the way I'll approach my. If I have a bad right shoulder, I might say my left knee is sore. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a million reasons why people will lie. But so we take the things they say with a grain of salt. But one thing I liked that Eddie Alvarez said when they were talking on and being interviewed was he's like, I'm not defending shit.
Yeah, I know. I love that.
Yeah, I don't go in and defend nothing. Yeah. I'm attacking. I'm going. I'm trying to go after the things that I want. That's the mindset we want.
That's exactly, like when he said that, I was like, "That's he's nailed it. That's exactly how he should be thinking." Because that is a new thing for him to be defending the UFC title. He's had belts before, but That's what you would want from a guy, because Eddie is that guy who is he's a hunter. He goes out and gets things, and if that becomes negative and he's trying to change that, then he's not Eddie anymore. He's not the guy that got there in the first place. So it was good that he's because that question came and he had that answer bang straight away, because it's something he's thought about. It's something he's aware of. He's conscious of. He didn't have to take a pause to think about it. He knew exactly that he's not defending shit. That's what he said. That's what he meant.
Yeah, that's what he meant. And you know, you talk about people changing or hesitating or being out of character.
Yeah.
You know, being an innovator or changing things or being fluid can be a character. So it doesn't mean character is only the one way you express yourself. But Woodley wins by being aggressive, and Woodley wins by going after. Woodley wins by moving forward, all of those things. And part of me, when I look at him and Wonder Boy, in some ways you stick with what works. But in another way, that's not possibly the way to beat him.
Yeah.
So we've got him. Do we change what works? Or do we say, you know, they just didn't do it well enough. They didn't go for a second, third, fourth effort with the wrestling. They didn't stay with the plan and keep him the way that he is.
Yeah, I mean, you want to keep that aggressive mindset that he has, but just doing it in a little bit of a more game-planned way, I suppose, right? But you still want to have him with that aggressive, go get him, put him under pressure kind of attitude. He can have that mindset while having a little bit more of a, you know, a tactical approach. It is true that Wonder Boy has kind of broken down guys and wore them down. Even as, like in the Hendricks fight, he broke him before he finished him. You know, Johnny realized he wasn't going to get him down. It wasn't going to happen. After that first takedown attempt, even you could see he was. And then he landed a few kicks.
And then he didn't even kind of understand what was coming at him.
He wasn't trying.
It's easy to understand. It's not a judgment.
Yeah.
Nobody would. There's very few martial artists in the world that would really understand that onslaught.
Yeah. But Rory tried his best to get at him, but he couldn't get it down. And eventually, it got easier and easier for Stephen to keep just doing his thing, and he wore them down. And so Woodley has to be cautious of that and aware of that going in, that it the first or second or third attempt might not be successful, but he has to be willing to keep bringing that same aggressive attitude.
He should go back and watch Misha Tate versus Holly Holm.
Exactly. It's a great example.
Because Misha Tate knew what she had to do. And if it's the 14th minute, the 18th minute, the 22nd minute, the 24th minute, it's still the job.
It's
still the job.
So, no matter how many times you failed, you have to... It's your controllable is to keep bringing that same mindset. You can't let yourself be broken by the failed attempts beforehand, which we see all the time.
Yeah,
all the time.
Sure. Yeah, it's like, I can't take him down is the wrong mindset. I didn't take him down. I'm going to go back at it.
Yeah.
He stopped this. We're going to go at it. We're going to take the things we learned and take down attempt number 14 and take down attempt number 18. One of them will be it. For Misha, it was the last one. You know, it's always the last one if you get the chance. But, you know, that's the example of that ravenous mindset. And that, again, Misha didn't have that. She needs to bring that back. That has to be. And you've said it many times, and we start to understand it and feel it. That is not something you are. It's something that training creates.
Yeah, for sure. And every fight is different. Every fight you have to bring it. And that brings us back to Conor and Eddie a little bit, because for Conor, he was complacent against Nate the first time. He had that complacency going in. And he has to, like, he's made adjustments with his cardio training and all that stuff. He's embraced that massively now. But mentally, he wasn't on point for that Nate Diaz fight. And he can't allow that to happen again against Eddie. He has to he can't just assume, I got that figured out, so I'll just go beat him now because he's mm-hmm. he's that style that I've yeah. beaten so many times. He has to be ready to go to that place that he was willing to go to in the second fight with Nate. Because he was willing to go to that extreme place he'd never gone before. I think he'll maybe at times have to go to that place yeah. again against Eddie Alvarez.
When I was doing the breakdown, the Sap Alvarez scale breakdown, and I was watching it, it was very strange how familiar and expected all of the you know, the storms were. Mm-hmm. Because they were like, this is going to happen. He talked about it after. He's like, that head is going to be under my chin, and he's going to be hand.
Yeah.
And knowing it, you know, I'll digress here for a second, but Ramdeen and I were commentating some fights for TKO in Montreal yeah. last weekend. They were awesome. And this young kid kind of starts off like Anderson Silva. He was an 0-0 fighter. And then the other guy came over there and just threw him down. And it's like he had visualized in his mind, I'm going to do all this amazing stuff, and then this is going to happen, and then I'm going to do a jumping spin kick, yeah. and I'm going to celebrate, because he had no context. The guys who go out and imagine, it's going to be the hardest 15 minutes of my life, I'm going to be in pain, I'm going to and embrace that and accept that, those are the guys. And at this level, they are all should be that, and they're all that to a certain degree. Mm-hmm. But that ability to say, I'm going to be in terrible spots, and when I am, I'm going to be ready to deal with
yeah, it. Yeah, like you said, embrace them mm-hmm. is a great place mm-hmm. where if you can get to that point where you're willing to not just get through it, but you want it because you know yeah. that I'm not going to break here, and that's going yeah. to cause him to break.
Yeah,
and that's where you want to get mm-hmm. to. That it's part of the game. It's part of this sport. Mm-hmm. So you have to. It's not just something you turn on. You work on that stuff in training mm-hmm. with the way even with cardio stuff. You get through those tough points in training, and the way you're talking to yourself in those moments mm-hmm. is crucial. Absolutely crucial. How are you talking to yourself? What are you focusing on? Are you focusing on how tired you are? Are you focusing on right. how much time is left? Are you focusing on how heavy his pressure is, or are you focused on what you need to be doing and technically what you need to be doing and the recovery and knowing, mm-hmm. understanding that your energy levels are good? So it's something you have to bring each fight as well. Mm-hmm. So Conor has to be willing to go to that place again, because yeah. he might be brought to that place, and if he's not ready, it won't just happen because it happened against Nate the second time. Mm-hmm.
So I named the scale after Eddie Alvarez
yeah.
because of his history of being able to go to that place and yeah. like relish, you know, the moment and relish the excitement of it and love it. When I first created the Sap Alvarez scale, I thought, well, that's who Eddie is.
Mm-hmm.
And then as we saw in this one, that's who you are when needed, but he became smarter. In the fights, particularly with Pettis and yeah. with Gill, he became yeah. smarter. That you assume that would be the approach that he'll take here.
Yeah, and I was watching back those fights. He's had four fights now in the UFC, and I watched them all back, mm-hmm. and not from a mentality point mm-hmm. of view. And there's differences between them all in terms mm-hmm. of how he, even how he looks coming out, mm-hmm. and that sounds silly yeah. to most people, but there is clear differences in how his behavior is and how his demeanor is mm-hmm. and everything. Cowboy fight, he comes out, it's his debut in the UFC. So he's been through all the shit with Bellator where his contract was all over the place and mm-hmm. he was sitting out for a while, and eventually he's finally here in the UFC. And it was a big occasion for him, a big event, big fight, and you could see it. He was looking around mm-hmm. everywhere, he was taking it all in, he was super fired up. Like all smiles, all expression, and even all through the walkout in the cage during the introductions, yep. he's just, you know, full yeah. of energy. Has a decent first round.
Good first round, yeah.
Yeah, very good. Yeah. Yeah. Like, Cowboy started slow. Cowboy yeah. tends to start slow, but Eddie started well. Yeah. But Eddie is gassed at the end of the first round.
Mm-hmm.
He's done at the end of the first mm-hmm. round in terms of his energy levels are not the same. Yeah. Like he gets through the whole yeah. three rounds, but. But
then at some points, if your energy is starting to go for whatever reason, emotional, physical exertion, all yeah. of those reasons, there's going to be physical attacks on your body. There's yeah. a brutal knee.
And Cowboy landed one step in knee. Oh, it was amazing. That,
again, you got to be a 10-10 on the Sap Alvarez yeah. scale to still be in there.
Yeah,
so his
yeah.
ability in that one was to show that he can still be there. But be there and win and be there are not the same
yeah.
things. That knee was vicious.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And most people, that's the end of the fight.
It was a fight-changing yeah. knee, for, yeah, sure. for sure. And he landed a few body kicks yeah. as well, Cowboy did mm-hmm. in that fight. And that
leg kicks too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like he dropped him with a leg kick,
mm-hmm.
and all that pressure and Cowboy mm-hmm. ramping it up was happening at the time where Eddie was coming down mm-hmm. as well, and,
yes.
and feeling the it wasn't just, it's not a cardio thing, it was a mindset thing. Mm-hmm. He was too ramped up, he was too built up. The next fight he had with Gil Melendez, mm-hmm. and there was a lot of history between those two guys for years.
Yep.
But he seemed a little bit more in control in that fight. He seemed like he'd learned a little bit. He wasn't taking it all in, and he wasn't in awe of the situation. And he comes in with a little bit more focus on him. Mm-hmm. Has a bad first round, but then turns it up and gets a close decision, but won the fight.
So in that one too, yes, agree with everything you're saying. But if we are going back to his resiliency, to his Sap Alvarez, he is in Mexico, exhausted, still digs deeper when necessary in round three. Also blows his nose, blinds himself,
completely.
Still fights with
one
eye.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So even,
one, two rounds with a closed eye.
Yeah, exactly. So even in these scenarios in which things have gone poorly, that weight rating and that risk-taking ability is working, even in these fights where he's being safer, he still has that in his pocket.
Yeah, for sure. And that's one of the things that like we were saying, Conor needs to prepare for that because Eddie Alvarez is going to bring you to those places. Yeah. He really is.
Yeah, he is.
The Pettis fight was, I think, his best in the UFC in terms of what he needed to do and go and execute, and he did it really to a T from the start. And his demeanor and his concentration and everything, you could see it. It was just all business this time. He was completely switched on. Mm-hmm. Like this was by far his best for me in terms of mindset and how he wants to be, how he controls.
And knowing what he needs to do and executing.
Yeah, just completely focused on one task. I'm going to go and do this thing that I need to do to beat Anthony Pettis. And he did it for three rounds from the start too. He took him down early and he just dominated him and grinded him out. That's what he planned to do. But he was completely switched on. There was no distractions. There was nothing. It wasn't emotional for him. He was completely switched on. And I think that's how he would want to be at his best. The Dos Anjos fight, obviously, first round knockout.
Results good.
I didn't like, I think it was back to a bit of the cowboy stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's fighting for the belt and it's a big occasion for him and everything. He's getting a title shot. But I saw a lot of the same stuff again where it's too emotional, too wound up, too intense. And that lack of focus that I think he would want to have on his best day wasn't quite there. Mm-hmm. So again, but that's something that's controllable for him, manageable for him. He can plan for, he can prepare for. He's known about this fight for ages, that it's going to be Conor, it's going to be in NYC, it's going to be defending his belt. So these are all big things to deal with, but they can all be handled and dealt with. And if he has that clear focus on what the job really is, and just focuses on that and gets down to work straight away, then
he's at his best.
Yeah, that's when he's being Eddie Alvarez at his best. Yeah.
They all are at their best. We all are, whatever it is we do, when that's the case, when we can access that. Michael Bisping told me that when I was asking about, he used to talk, he needs to get emotional. Mm. He needs to hate the guy. He needs to get himself emotionally invested. He believed that. And then now he says, I realize that he succeeded despite that.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, correct. I think we all kind of understand that's correct. Even the people who think they need it, actually, if they could get beyond that, would do better. And now, as a champion, he beats Anderson Silva. He's, performing at his very best. He realizes that one of the keys was getting past that. So on some level, part of you, early in this understanding of this kind of scenario, would look at Eddie and go, yeah, but that's who he is.
Yeah.
That's authentically him. He's wound up. But that, I think, is the wrong approach.
Yeah.
And people like Bisping, who have once been that and now are more than that, I think they're proof of it.
Yeah, and I mean, everyone is different, though, and this is the key thing. Not everyone.
You're comparing Eddie. On to Eddie.
That's
not
all
on.
I ever do. Yeah.
And that's easy. That's an easier comparison because if you compare Eddie to Joanna Jędrzejczyk, they're not the same humans. But Eddie to Eddie is that.
That's
AA
the comparison.
Is the comparison.
Yeah. And Eddie's at his best, I feel, when he's got that clear, focused, switched on, like almost expressionless. Mm-hmm. The way he came out, he was just straight to the job.
Yeah.
That's when he's at his best. Mm-hmm. Someone else wants to come out smiling. Sam Alvey wants to come out smiling, and that's his thing, and that's where he gets his thing from. Mm-hmm. And everyone's got their own way of getting the best out of themselves. Ronda with that real intensity, not that put on face that she was doing, but that real intensity.
Yeah.
That's when she's at her best. Everyone's got their own way of doing things, but they need to be aware of what that is and how to put themselves there. And it is all controllable.
So now we'll get to Conor's best. And what, you know, I think if this fight came along and he hadn't had the Nate Diaz experience, this would be very different scenario.
This would be an eye-opening thing for him. Yeah, I haven't felt it before.
Yeah. And so what I think also what he has learned by experiencing this approach worked. When we saw he was fighting Diaz the first time, for whatever reason, he felt like he was putting on the Conor face. Mm. Did the smile, did the thing, and acted it out. Mm-hmm. And when he fought the second time, he didn't do any of that. It suddenly, the freeing nature of that is like, oh, I don't need this.
Yeah.
This isn't an act, or this isn't a walk, or it isn't a face, or it isn't a stance. This is an expression of being ready.
Yeah.
And seeing him just stone-faced. And I put it in the breakdown, the two. I didn't reference it. But in one, he is the old Conor, and in the other, he's literally a statue in there just kind of waiting. And you see it. You see the two, how different that moment is.
Yeah.
That would scare a lot of people. I don't feel like myself.
Yeah.
But I think he felt like himself and understood myself isn't a bunch of things I act or do. It's a being myself, being turned on.
What really matters is what's underneath all of the stuff we get to see on the outside. Mm-hmm. So, like, anyone can do that same goofy face that he does, the little smile,
and
that little smirk and that
whatever,
thing.
Yeah.
Anyone can do that. Yeah. It doesn't mean you're going to go out and fight like him. It's nothing to do with it. Mm-hmm. That was just the expression that he has at that time that just felt right for him. But if you start to do it because it's what you do, then you're not doing it for the reason anymore. It's the same with, like, I talk a lot about self-talk with fighters and stuff, but I don't like mantras as opposed to working on self-talk.
Or
mantras
rather,
are, I'm going to be champion of the world one day. And you say that every day. It doesn't mean anything after a while.
There's another word some people use for it. I forget my self something or other, but it's the same horse shit. Like, these things are side tangent for just a moment. Misha Tate felt so good about being hypnotized that somehow now I'm good. And that may have been an issue. It's like, well, I got my hypnosis in there, so I'm good. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? If you replace the actual things you have to do with the one thing, I went and got hypnotized, I mean, that'll take. What if your opponent also got hypnotized?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it can't be the thing, because if both of us do it, then it's useless.
Yeah, and again, that stuff, even my stuff, like what I do with fighters, it's more practical than hypnosis or mantras or any of that kind of stuff. It's
much affirmations. More affirmations. That was the word I was looking for.
Much more practical than any of that stuff. Yeah. But still, it's up to the fighter to go and do it. There's no magic with this. It's still up to them to go and actually put the work in and get their mindset right. So hypnosis and affirmations and all those kinds of things, they can cover up the cracks. Mm-hmm. You know, they can put a little cover over, and under the surface, it's not right. And but when you think it is, then you're in trouble.
So
if you think you've done the work.
Well, I was just going to say, we have a lot of different times as we've done this podcast. I guess it's a show today.
Like, yeah.
I mean, what's the difference, right? We're talking, which is ultimately, now I'm super relaxed. At the beginning, it all felt kind of weird. Even though I'm in this studio, I was in a different spot. Now I'm just talking to you about the stuff we talk about, which is really interesting. Like, we're experiencing it right now. But, you know, your process is a process, and you are in getting them to do work.
Mm-hmm.
Really, you're examining their work, their ability to do work, their ability to learn better, and you're developing their ability to develop their ability. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I mean, that is kind of the process. If all you did was on Skype ask someone to close their eyes and act out the fight, we've done nothing.
Meaningless,
we've accomplished nothing.
Yeah.
It's an ongoing helping refine their systems of learning and experience and self-assessment and all those things, right?
Yeah, that's a huge part of it, is getting better at
getting better.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a huge part of it. And that's practical stuff, it really is. And then that's post-fight review, or like a preview in terms of, what way are you looking at this? And what kind of things are sticking out for you there? And then you find little things that are, there are thoughts around the fight that aren't true or fair or accurate, but they're there. And we find them, and then we unravel them, and they disappear. It's just like, it's gone. Yeah. And you can't have that same thought anymore. Because when you do, you look at it completely different.
You look at it the way you've now looked at it.
Like, it's like someone making their UFC debut, say, like Eddie did against Cowboy. he can't ever feel that way again about going into the UFC. He won't have that because he's gone through it, he's felt it, and he won't have the same. Even though he's walking out again, it won't mean the same thing. He's looking at it all different. He's different, and it looks different. That doesn't need to happen. You don't need to have that bad experience first to get to that point. You can plan for that and prepare for that. But the same with these thoughts that can linger around a fight. Once you examine them and unravel them and see them for what they really are, you can't have them anymore. You know, you can have it, but it won't have the same effect on you emotionally.
You'll see it different. You'll experience it different. You'll feel different. So if we got 10 or 15 minutes left, it's time to talk about Conor McGregor. I don't know how we left this till the end. It just took shape that way. But so the first thing that I have is, or the first thought that I have is, when I've become some type of expert at looking at this guy's work. I never thought of that. That's what I do, but my job is analyzing their job. You know, so it's pretty neat. Like suddenly to realize that's what your job is. Are there 10 people on planet Earth that actually have a better study of Conor McGregor than me? I don't know. Maybe there is. Maybe there's 30. Maybe there's only two. I don't know. But one of the things, I've looked at his process. So I love the way that the man moves, and that's what attracted my attention as a fight analyst. The movement and the way that he expresses himself physically, the way he shows the martial arts. What I've become very interested in as an analyst, but also a person who's interested in his own growth, is watching his process. His process, and we can all watch, study people's processes because they all have application in our own process of whatever that is in life. But I'm watching this guy optimize his ability to learn and to learn the martial arts in particular. And that's what I see. And that's fascinating. It's fascinating. And that I'm accurate, right? From what 100%. You've seen, he isn't just studying fighting. He's studying how to study fighting and himself.
Constantly. He's obsessed with it. I mean, that's the word that he's used a lot and John has used a lot. And it's true. He's obsessed with with this sport and his part in it and to try to master it. Completely obsessed. It was like no more apparent than after the loss against Nate Diaz, where he was straight away he was thinking about what was my part in this? How can I adjust it? What can I fix? And John Kavanagh was on with Ariel Helwani during the week and gave some great insight for fans about Conor's reaction to it as well with talking to John. But we need to get back to what we used to do. Compared, like we kind of drifted away from that stuff as the stardom has increased and as the the level has gone up. We've gotten away from what got us there, just in terms of the way they were training, even and the way the relationship was and everything like that. So, but that took a level of awareness and self awareness for Conor to be able to look at that and see that for what it is, and then go and do something about it. Because that's that thing then of now he's going to be better at doing this sport because he's reviewed that and figured out what the truth was there, and then he's embraced all the cardio work and he's taken that stuff on board and brought in some new people to move around with and train with and everything, and just constant evolution, which is obviously, I think, the best way to approach anything you're doing.
Yeah. So there's a school of thought out there that if we spend all the time on skill development, we won't have to work on our athletics, be faster, more fit, whatever. That is a school. It's been existence in tennis. It's existed in golf, everything. There is the fight between the people who teach the skills and the people who build the athletic platform. It's always been there. And one of their reasonings is, if I were to spend whatever time we're spending on your athletics, on skill development, we'd get a better long-term thing. That is not true, in my opinion. I've studied the relationship of these things, and I will continue to for the rest of my life. And there are certain skills that happen that can only happen because of the athletic platform that they work on. Dominic Cruz, if he cannot move like that, he cannot fight like that. You know? And the guys who are the skill guys eventually come around to this area, and they're blown away by what they can change with their body. If your body is better, you can train harder. Then you can learn better. If your endurance is a thing and you're an obsessed type of guy, you strive to work on that. And there's a skill development element of endurance. So endurance is working on your body's capacity to handle work and its ability to recover, those two things. But skill development is finding when to recover, understanding the skills of knowing your body, all of those things. And this guy's become obsessed with that. Now, Eddie says, and others, oh, he's got no gas tank. That's a dangerous thing, to walk into a fight with the belief that somebody is bad at something. Because all that has to change to change the dynamic of everything is they work on it and you're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I, so as much as I love seeing Eddie say, I don't defend shit, I hate seeing him go, he's going to...
8 minutes and he's done or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, when that turns out to not be true, you know, now we're entering a place I didn't expect us to be.
Yeah, and then that's dangerous. You don't want to have that expectation. I mean, we've seen it in the rematch with Diaz. Conor was right there at the end, and it was a grueling fight. He was right there at the end.
Mm-hmm. And he'll have even built on that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He'll have improved since then. It's one of those things that, like you said, it does exist, that conflict between the skill development coaches and the strength and conditioning coaches, and even to a lesser part the mental coaches, they all want their thing to be the most important thing sometimes. Mm-hmm. Or like, I'm generalizing, mm-hmm. obviously,
it's true.
But that can exist in lots of different sports as well. Like that thing, you know, people want it, there's so much ego involved, and they think their thing is the most important thing, therefore it deserves the most time. But instead of there being that conflict, it should be a compliment to each other. Mm-hmm. You know, as in, well, if the skill is better, then we can, you know, we can be more efficient with the way we train, the conditioning. But if the conditioning's better, we get to do the skill better and for longer and sustain it. And you know, they complement each other all the time. And if while the skill's improving, the mental's improving, and while the conditioning's improving, the mentality's improving, and it's all interconnected. There shouldn't be that conflict.
And that learning to learn can then apply, and you can get more value out of the improvement of all of them.
Yeah, and when you get a team built around you with that mindset of everyone has their part to play, but each part of it is lesser than the whole sum put together, that's when you've got something a bit special going. And I feel like Conor has that right now with the way they've got things set up. And it's a lot of it is trial and error, and you have to go through experiences, you know, no matter how much you can learn before things, you still have to maybe go through some negatives to get to the point where you learn from it. But I feel like he's arrived at that point now where he's got all that stuff in line, and that's a nice place to be. But I'm sure, like, to some degree, Eddie's going to be at his best as well. This should be Eddie at his best as well. His skill development should be up from where it was. He come on leaps and bounds with Mark Henry. It seems like, by the way he's talking since that was like his first fight with them was Pettis, right?
Yep.
He feels like he's come on with skill level. The conditioning work has always been a plus for him, but he's maintained that, and hopefully he's learned mentally from all these different experiences. So what we should get on Saturday is two guys in their prime that have learned so much about the ups and downs they've had over the years.
Yeah, you'll be blown away by how long we've been here. It always goes really fast, but I'm sure we've been here 45 or 50 minutes, and we're going to have to wrap up. It's a short one today. Hopefully we can get together soon. But I agree. If what we're seeing so much of these days is fighters who now understand how to get the best out of themselves, and if both of these are that, then you get the craziest fight ever, and it often will come down to skill, and it'll come down to game plan, and it'll come down to execution. And Conor's a really hard fighter to beat when he's at his best, and I think he'll be at his best. But Eddie's got roots to do it. I think I might just sit this one out and just cheer at the TV and not have a dog in the fight, which will be the only time I'll ever do this with either of these
that.
Two. No, you'll be cheering for McGregor, you nut-hugger. I think I will. As a fanatic, these two fighters just mean so much to me as a fight fanatic that I think I'll just enjoy it for what it is, accept the result that I get. There'll be moments where they're both having their best moments. Well, I will cheer for either one, but I think we're going to get a killer fight.
Yeah, 100% we're going to get a killer fight.
We are. Yeah. So thanks so much for joining us in our studio. I don't know if we'll ever do this again. Maybe we will. Maybe we will. But please keep sending us. And we had questions. People sent us
questions. We had some questions. We didn't have time to get to them. Yeah. We'll get to some after the fights.
We'll try to get back together within a few days to a week plus a few days after this fight. And thanks so much for all the great feedback and for sending us questions. And David Mullins, sportspsychology.com. He's David Mullins, MMA on Twitter. Robin Black, MMA on Twitter. We love you. Talk to you later.